Okay, Chris, before we talk about our guest, are you going to accept my apology for me looking the way that I do? Because I know it's I think it's become a little bit of a
You don't have to apologize to me, but for the people that are watching the video, not listening to the podcast, the audio part of it or like that, you may have to apologize to them because they actually have to see you all beat up like that. So,
oh yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear
your kid's eyes, you know, all that stuff. No, he's not that bad.
Not your kid's eyes. So, here, ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear at the very beginning of our discussion in this. If you're listening to the podcast, you won't get to see it. Our members are the ones that get the video and they get to see it, but they have to see this mug that I recently broke my nose, and now I'm a week and a half out, but I still. I'm not looking great. So a couple
picking
black eyes.
Picking a fight
eyes.
With a gorilla at the zoo can have its consequences. that's what it is.
That's right. It's rough. Okay, so Chris, didn't I tell you this Jeff Hancher, I had heard him speak and I thought, oh, we got to get this guy. And I know he's not a traditional educator, but after listening to him, I have to assume that you agree that his concept on feedback and accountability is right on track, don't you think?
Oh yeah, I mean that. I think that's the problem. I think with a lot of employees or just the general public these days is that everybody seems to have a really hard time taking constructive feedback. But also, leaders have a hard time tiptoeing through that minefield of giving good feedback without, you know, going too overboard one way or another. So, being a low man on the totem pole in the company we work for, you know, I always appreciate it when my leaders give me, know how to give me good constructive feedback or like that. And I think it's important to growth. I mean, anybody who thinks that they don't need to course correct on occasion or learn something new, or improve or like that, you're fooling yourself. So,
yeah. And I, you know, we've all been in the position where we are answering to others as well as others answering to us. Mm-hmm. And on both ends, it's difficult and sometimes uncomfortable, but embracing that discomfort, knowing that, you know, as expectations, feedback, and accountability are needed for any sort of growth and improvement, for us to do nothing is actually a disservice to those that we're serving. So we have to embrace it, and many of us just have to make some changes. And I think Jeff just gives great advice. So Jeff Hancher was awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, you're really gonna like this. Enjoy. Ladies, gentlemen, educators, leaders, welcome to Leader Chat. I am Jeff Rose, and we have today what I would describe as a very relevant topic. It's relevant even if leaders may not be asking for it. So once I got once I heard our guest speak for the first time, I thought we need to talk to him. And the reason we need to talk to this guest is because I know how difficult it is as an educational leader to do things as important as give feedback. Not just feedback, but how we work with our employees, how we work with our teachers, if you're a principal, if you're a superintendent, your central office administrators, how you create an accountability system, but how you do it so it's effective. And it sometimes is really difficult for a variety of emotional reasons. And we're going to get into that. And once again, I heard this guest speak once, and I thought, I need to talk to him. And so I ran after him and then pinged him and bugged him until he said, okay, let's talk. So we're going to have a great conversation that I think is extremely relevant to education. I think it's relevant to probably every leadership post, but specifically education. And I will get into the details and nuance of why I believe that is the case, as will the guest and I, who is Jeff Hancher. Now, I'm just going to do a little bit of the bio, just a tiny bit, and I'm going to bring Jeff right on, and we're going to kind of dive in. So Jeff served in the United States Army He actually began his career as a blue-collar worker at a large corporation. And then since that position, Jeff was promoted 10 times and then achieved advanced leadership positions at a Fortune 500 company. And then during this pursuit, he experienced varying levels of success and accolades and actually did extremely well. But there was something missing to a degree. And I'm not going to describe that. I'll let him describe that. And so what he decided to do was make a serious change in his own life. But then that shifted into how he yearned to and currently does support other leaders and other people in their organizations be better at what they do. And so after 23 years in corporate America and several entrepreneur ventures, he is now 100% focused on using his acquired skills to fill these gaps in terms of leadership development strategy and to ensure others reach their fullest potential. And you'll understand specifically because this concept of how we create accountability systems and give feedback to those that we're serving, but also leading and guiding and supporting is just vastly important and oh so difficult. So without further ado, let me bring Jeff Hanscher in with us. Jeff, it is great seeing you, my friend.
Great seeing you as well, Jeff. It is, I've been anticipating this. I have been in front of educators in the past, but not nearly this kind of audience. But what we've learned about leadership along the way is it transcends industry. It transcends ideals. You know, it's about making influence. So whether it's in at education or around the family dinner table, leaders have a high calling and a lot of work to do. And I've dedicated my life to supporting that effort.
Indeed. And I'm glad to hear it, Jeff. And I need to do something that's going to feel a little bit awkward here. I'm going to tell a story that's completely random because our producer, Chris Richard, wants me to. Okay. So I'm wearing glasses. And so, by the way, I'll remind not just you, but others as well who listen or watch the Leader Chat. The members of our leadership circle have access to this video that we're creating, right? We're kind of like, it's like a talk show and I'm the host. I'm no David Letterman. I just do my best. And they have access to the video. And then others who are not in the leadership circle or those that do can also access this content via the podcast, Leader Chat, and wouldn't know what the video people would, which is something is different about my face. So I broke my nose last week and I'm still sitting on two black eyes, so to speak, kind of cut on the bridge of my nose. And last week it was awful. I actually had to cancel another Leader Chat because it would have looked like the guest was interviewing with an MMA fighter. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that I am not. I am not an MMA fighter. I don't have a great story about you should see the other guy. I could pretend. The truth is this. I was helping my son with a lacrosse drill. It was a very safe, benign thing. I toss him the ball and then he kind of dodges around me and then shoots. But what happened in his dodge around me is the tail end of his stick smacked me. And he's a senior in high school, big, strong kid. He's going to play Division I college next year. And so it smacked me and boom. I mean, the thing just, this is my fifth nose break, by the way. I've broken it five times. So I know exactly what it feels like. It felt just like that. I come to and there's blood everywhere. It looks like someone was murdered on this field. But
helmet safety is important, folks. I'm just saying right now.
Yeah, that's right. God. Thanks, Chris. So that happened last week. It's been now a little bit over a week. I felt like I'm looking pretty good. I walk into the studio today and Chris looks at me and thinks, Jeff, what? And I see you just seen me last week, Chris. And he's like, oh, gosh. Some people said, hey, wear makeup, Jeff. I just wasn't prepared for that. I wasn't ready for that. So I felt confident. Chris made me feel worse about myself. Here we are, Jeff. And I want the viewers to know that's what happened. It was not a fight. It was me supporting my son. How about that?
Well, listen, I mean, you could have went a lot of ways with that. I mean, you could have just went carte blanche with how this happened. You know, my son was standing over me and said, there's more where that came from.
That's exactly right. Whatever it might be. That's exactly right.
But hey, I can tell you on behalf of anybody that might be watching this or listening, it doesn't look too bad. I mean,
yeah, well, thanks. Does it? I mean, it I feel kind of masculine, so I don't know if it makes me look.
I mean,
like
I wouldn't mess with you. I would not mess with you.
Yeah. Nor should you, especially from you know, Pittsburgh or wherever you are.
The other guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Right. Okay, so let's dive in here. Thanks for indulging me there.
Of course.
So, I had the pleasure of listening to a very short presentation of yours, and you know the focus of that was the importance of giving, you know, feedback and truly creating these systems of accountability. And as you were talking about it, I was enthralled because I know that's hard. Mm-hmm. But before we get into like the content of it all, maybe you could describe a little bit more on your bio than I gave, right? So help us read between the lines. You had this shift, right, from corporate America to say, I want to do something else and different. Tell us about that calling and then why you chose the topic that you help people with. How did that all come to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worthwhile giving a little bit of the Cliff's Notes journey of, because it'll all tie into why this is my passion project. I grew up in gross poverty. You know, I grew up with very little. I had two very, very sick parents, never worked a day in my life. You know, part of my responsibility as a child was to cut metal tin from coffee cans and pop rivet it to the car floor, to give you an idea, to fill up the kerosene heaters when they would come shut the utilities off. So not a lot of direction. Didn't know what I wanted to do. I end up going to the military just to get out of Dodge. You know, I was dysfunctional as a teenager. And upon transitioning from the military, I thought I wasn't going to use the GI Bill to go to college. I was about to start college, and my dad called and told me they were putting mom in hospice. But the caveat was he was having his first leg amputated. And so I put college on the back burner, went home to help out, get the visiting nurses set up. And I was just looking for a seasonal job to help my parents pay some bills. And in September of 1996, I started at Cintas Corporation, which later became a Fortune 500 company. Uneducated, not knowing anything about how to be a professional. I ended up spending 24 and a half years at that company and got a lot of accolades and was promoted a lot. And I'd love to tell you it's because I'm awesome. But the reality is it's because I had amazing leaders. And I think back to that journey. If I had not had those leaders in my life, one, I wouldn't have created the life that I've been able to create for my family and my community. But I wouldn't have been able, more importantly, to give back to other leaders. And in early 2019, I started a podcast at the prompting of a friend to help some nonprofits here in the Pittsburgh market. Little did I know that people were going to listen to that. And we went on to win some awards from Apple and iTunes and so forth. And I started becoming more and more fulfilled. And I thought, you know, I want my legacy to be that when he left this world, he left a legacy of empowering other leaders to make change in their followers the same way that change was made in my life. Because at the end of the day, that's really the goal of a leader, I believe, Jeff, is to help others reach their fullest potential. And this subject of what I'm writing my book about and doing all these workshops about is really empowering leaders to understand how to properly do that, because it's just not taught well out there. And a lot of leaders are just winging it and hoping for the best. So I'm on a mission to give some structure and give some confidence so that leaders can not only make change in their organization, but real change in the lives of other people.
So how did you, as you're making this transition, and you know, you it almost sounds like you really discovered this this new why, right, through your work, right? Because you clearly, I mean, your story of overcoming you know, this incredible challenges as a young person, and then experiencing some success, but then it sounds like later you went, aha, it's actually helping other leaders and created this kind of trickle effect of influence that was inspiring to you. But then how did you narrow in on these topics for which that, you know, you are helping and teaching people, because that, you know, not a lot of people say, you know, I want to focus on our supportive systems of accountability and giving really important and sometimes difficult feedback to people. How did you choose that niche?
Well, I'd love to tell you that, you know, I was whiteboarding one day and I just said, this is the problem. I have a solution. But the reality is it kind of found me. What I found was we would put information on the website. There was some organic growth from that. I started going inside of companies and typically they would just call me in to say, what is it that you do? And I'd give them five or six topics. And when I would present our performance management workshop to them, they would automatically say, that's the one. That's exactly what we need. So they knew they had a problem. They didn't really know how to fix it. And this content that I was presenting, that's the one, that's it. So I would go do a workshop and then all of a sudden referrals would come. I start doing open workshops that anybody in the world could come to. And by the way, I do a lot of other things. I do a lot of other workshops, but 90% of the time, this performance management workshop is the biggest request. So I got to thinking like, okay, there's a real challenge out here. There's a real opportunity. Senior leadership, mid-level leadership, they've identified there's an opportunity for growth in this area. And this workshop is supporting people and leaders to have more impact with this. And so it kind of found me in that I was getting feedback from the business community that this is where the problem is. So I doubled down on my efforts and learned why was this problem existing. And I just kept modifying my work and becoming more of an expert in the field of performance management.
So let's give a 10,000 foot view perspective of this workshop and performance management. I mean, so and I'll say too that it actually wasn't the term performance management that when I first heard you speak, I thought, oh, that's it. It was the feedback. Details of it, right? How a person actually sees that to fruition within like the work environment with the people they're supporting, right? But
yes.
Maybe just summarize the workshop so our listeners kind of know what we're pulling from.
Yeah, I would say that I call it the three-legged stool, and it's expectations, feedback, and accountability. So often, the accountability piece can be right, and that is kind of leading with the stick. You know, if you do that again, it's going to hurt. But there wasn't real clear expectations. Or we see the other side of it, which is I've set clear expectations, but now I really don't know how to give good feedback and hold people accountable. And so it's this trifecta that has to happen that can really lead to change. And sometimes we get the expectations right. And this would be an example of a speed limit sign. A speed limit sign is an expectation. But if you and I have never heard of anybody that's ever gotten a speeding ticket or never heard of anybody that got injured because of excessive speeding, we probably would ignore the sign. And so there has to be accountability to every expectation. If not, it's not having impact. Now, there's others that they say, look, I'm going to hold people accountable. But what they fail to do is make the right deposits. And so I'm always asking leaders, do you want to be a boss that people report to? Or do you want to be a leader that people don't want to let down? This dynamic is absolutely possible. And I've seen this play out in my own life, Jeff. It was November 23rd of 2002 that I held my mom in my arms for the last time as she took her last breath at the age of 47 years old. Now, in my profession, my why at that point was to get to a place of wealth that I could take care of my parents so they wouldn't have to cut pills in half and, you know, so because they couldn't afford co-pays. And this was always my drive. Once she died, I felt like defeated, deflated. What's the point of going on? But I had a leader by the name of Sean that helped me through that journey. Now, he could have easily came in and said, hey, quit whining and quit crying. Life goes on. But he had been on the journey with me. And he reminded me of why success was important. And it was that kind of leadership that kind of put wind back in my sails. And not only did I go on to have a great year that year as the rookie salesperson, of our region, but I also was able to help contribute to the team. So there's got to be these great expectations that are clear and reasonable. They're fair. They're understood, and they understand, and people understand why they're good for them. But there has to be feedback that goes along the way, because just setting an expectation and expecting it to happen time and time again, perfectly and flawlessly, we all know that's unrealistic. It's for the same reason we have to remind our 16-year-olds to brush their teeth and, you know, to put on deodorant, because it's like, well, I told you when you were three how to brush your teeth. All of a sudden, I got to keep reminding you. So that's the essence, is this three-legged stool of expectations, feedback, and accountability.
Have you found, like, so it, let's talk about education for a minute. And, you know, of course, I'm biased because the vast majority of my career has been in education, in leadership positions in education, but education nonetheless. And, you know, this one assumption that I've had for years, which may or may not be accurate, is that I think, you know, education tends to draw a certain kind of person. Not always, but for the most part, right? It's usually people that are really driven by, you know, these intrinsic motivators, right? You don't go into education for that extrinsic reward. You would be very an unwise person if you did. And so it brings people with big hearts that want to serve, that are committed to servitude. In fact, that is almost like this life mission. And how can I influence the life of somebody else via this job of being an educator? Which is a really, really good thing. It also produces, in my mind, some challenges in that there is this world of nice that we tend to, I think, struggle with to a degree. And I remember facing this the first time I was a principal of an elementary school, and I grew up in an environment, my dad's a coach, things were very clear. There was very focused feedback growing up in my home. And so I was used to, and I was an athlete myself, and so I played through college, and I was used to getting very clear and sometimes stern, you know, mean feedback sometimes, and I had thick skin. But I remember giving after an observation with a teacher, and I thought I was being really gentle in terms of giving her some feedback relative to, you know, some expectations that I think were clear for everyone. And I look up, and the poor thing is just crying her eyes out. And I really hurt her feelings. And it kind of blew me back. It made it really tricky for me over the years on how do I give feedback. And then what I also noticed as I was in different positions, often principals, when I was no longer a principal, I sometimes worried that maybe principals weren't giving the kind of constructive, honest critique of their people to make teachers better. Even if they yearn for it. And so it's like the culture of education sometimes didn't align to the kind of feedback that I think was needed. And I don't know if that's a leader issue. I don't know if that's a culture issue. But you must face this kind of thing all the time. So walk me through my assumptions and maybe either agree or blow me out of the water. What am I missing?
Well, part of it, and you're spot on, Jeff, and part of it is there has to be a level of self-awareness. It has to start with self-awareness. You know, there was a national poll that was put out last year that told us that 65% of leaders strongly agree that they're effective at giving feedback to others. But check this out. Only 21% of the people that reported to them were also polled. Only 21% of them said that they believe that they've received meaningful feedback in the last week.
There's a disconnect there.
This is a big disconnect. It's a big gap. Rarely do leaders say, I'm not good at giving feedback. And you're talking about the nice, you know, I want to be nice. Being nice is not feedback. One of the things that we teach is that feedback is not good or bad. And that's the first thing that we want people to understand, is that feedback is not good or bad. Sometimes leaders start defining feedback as good or bad. It's not good or bad. So what is feedback? Like, if you put feedback into this limited definition, I call it the process where information is returned or communicated with the intent of modifying the next action. Now, especially as an educator, when you look at that, it should give you some relief that it's not good or bad. Its intent is to modify the next action. So now I'm not even looking at feedback as good or bad. And I like to tell stories to make a point, but if I were to ask the viewer or the listener, hey, if you had bad breath, would you want me to tell you? And most people would say, yes, I would want to know. Well, what I've just done there is I've set the expectation that it's okay to give you this feedback. So then, you know, if you and I, Jeff, if I were to ask you, Jeff, if we're ever in public and I noticed that you have bad breath, do you want me to tell you? You would probably say yes. Now, when I came up to tell you, I would tell you obviously with empathy and tone, but I would say, hey, look, I just wanted to make you aware based off what you've asked me to do. Your breath stinks, but I have mints. Now you're not offended. Now I've given you a gift, right? So yeah. This is coming with the setting expectations and making big deposits. So we can't look at feedback as bad or good. What it is data. What it does is it reinforces positive or it redirects undesirable performance or behavior. That's it. And I'll prove this in the next 10 seconds.
Okay.
If I'm asking everybody listening or viewing to think about three leaders that have had the biggest impact on your life, if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be who you are. I got two questions now that you have them in your mind. One, did they want to see you win? And the answer is probably yes. My follow-up question is this, were they tough on you? And the answer is probably yes. So what we've uncovered here is that you can make meaningful deposits that earn you the right to have tough conversations. If you're just having tough conversations without deposits, you're a monster. If you're just being nice without accountability, you're passive, and you are the one listening and you know who you are that feels like a human doormat. Despite all the sheet cake that I buy on birthdays, all the handwritten notes, all the gifts home to the new baby and all the things that I do, and this is how I'm treated, you might be liked, but you might be missing respect. That's why it's a three-legged stool. If you take any one of them out, you lose leadership effectiveness.
So the example, let's just for fun play with the bad breath example. It's a good one, right? If look, you and I have a relationship and a rapport. You should be able to say to me what you described. Hey, you know, your breath stinks. I got a mint for you, buddy. And I should be able to appreciate it, right? Mm-hmm. Thank goodness Jeff told me so somebody didn't have to experience what's coming out of here, right? Mm-hmm. Now, but that's still hard for people, isn't it?
It is hard.
I mean, it's still, and when you see others do it well, it's actually and really impressive. I used to do, I'd just go and visit a school and I would ask the principal, let's go for a walk. And we'd go in and out of the classrooms and so forth. And whenever we'd go to say, watch the choir or the band, or we'd be out at the field watching a team, when we'd see those coaches or those teachers, they're giving constant feedback, very specific to the athlete or the musician or, you know, the singer, very specific. They'd stop and say, whoa, I need to get a little bit more of this, a little bit less of that. And by the way, it was all very accepted. It was beautiful feedback, assessment and feedback. And then yet it's still difficult for people to do. What mm-hmm. is it? And then how do you help the leader gather the gumption to maybe start and create each leg to the stool? Because it's not just one thing. You can't just hammer somebody and expect, right, as you were describing. Yeah. So what are maybe some of the first steps you advise leaders on doing so that they can be like that coach or, you know, that you know, the band instructor or a really good leader giving critical feedback.
Yeah. I mean, it does come to earning the right. You know, if a stranger, a total stranger comes up to you and says, hey, listen, your breath stinks, we'd probably react some type of way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's a confidant, a brother, a sister, a dad, you know, a best friend that says, hey, I thought you would want to know, we already know, even if we don't like hearing what they have to say, we know their heart. And so there are things that we can do in this expectations phase to start earning the right to have the tough conversation. Because part of this feedback scenario is understanding that tough conversations, they're absolutely necessary, but they don't have to be as painful as you think if you've earned the right to the tough conversation. You can do this, Jeff, by building relationships, by having one-on-one debriefs with everybody that reports to you. Now, whatever that frequency looks like, you can figure that out based off of workload. But what people need is time. They need time with a leader. There has to be this gap that's closed in trust. This is when we're asking questions like, why is success important to you? This is when we're asking questions like, if I were ever seeing you behaving or making decisions in a way that did not represent your career and personal goals, would you want me to tell you? Well, of course. So I'm starting to set the table of these tough conversations and this effective feedback before there's a problem. When I start building this level of consistency, I've now started earning the right to a tough conversation. I was just in a meeting last week, and this is a good example of this, and this was an executive level meeting, and you know, driver types, if you will. And I said, hey, before we get started, I just want to go through a quick exercise. I want everybody to pull out your phone. I want you to randomly pick an employee on your team. I want you to email them right now. And I want you to say to them, I'm going to be in the office this Friday at 3:00. I'd like for you and I to talk. Just send that email out to a random employee. And you could see they got white as a ghost. And I said, did anybody send the email? Show of hands. Nobody sent the email. I said, why did you all not send the email? They said, if I sent that email, that person would panic. They would think something was wrong. They would probably think I was firing them. And I said, executive team, you're making my point. If any of you were to text your child that same message, I have some time Friday at 3:00, I need to talk. Would they automatically think it's bad? Probably not. Why? Because you've laid the groundwork along the way. This is the key to having the tough conversation. Because what we know about anybody that's ever reached their potential, it came through tough conversation. It came through when you thought you should go left, somebody told you to go right. But if you're not setting these deposits, Jeff, you become a micromanager. You become a tyrant. This is the stuff, by the way, that is causing this quiet quitting thing that is a real thing. You know, 6 in 10 employees are quietly quitting. This is a stat. And this is costing the world's economy nearly $9 trillion a year. But these same employees, here's what they're telling us. They're more likely to become engaged with just a few tweaks to their workplace and feedback from their leadership. So these things absolutely work. And by the way, even if you're listening, they sound very simple. But simple and easy can be miles apart. And that's why I think people are flocking to this content, because now they can take something away that's very organic and that they can start applying immediately in their education systems, in their businesses, in their homes.
As you're working with leaders, Jeff, you're working with all different kinds of leaders from different industries. And as we all know, every leader has a different style, right? Mm-hmm. Based upon kind of their person, right? We've taken reams of tests, right? So whether it's Myers-Briggs, whatever that means, your strength-based, whatever that may be, you're a certain color. Everyone, I'm strong in these areas, I'm weak in these areas, and these are things that are natural to me, and these are the strengths maybe I hone in on, and these are the things I work on as a leader. I assume, based upon the leader and their style and their strengths and maybe their blind spots, that they may be successful in one or two of the legs to the stool and then struggle in other areas. Have you been able to, over time, assess leaders, how they are and what they may struggle on, and then kind of align that to some of your coaching and mentoring?
Yes. Yes. I think style does matter. But I do tell leaders quite often, as it comes to this type of content that I teach, one, I think it's good to understand your style, but understand it and move on quickly, because your style is probably going to come out more in your delivery. But I would tell you what I teach even more than style is, and again, I'm for style because, you know, if I'm an extrovert talking to an introvert, I got to approach that differently. So personality is a piece of that. And that does fall into more of the emotional intelligence side. But I think the first step is to understand, why do leaders avoid it first off? And there's hosts of reasons. The biggest of being, they haven't really been trained to give feedback correctly, which is why high emotion comes in feedback. The sweaty palms, the yelling, the throwing of a chair, watering down feedback because they're afraid of what? Hurting somebody's feelings, offending somebody, disappointing somebody, embarrassing somebody. Or the big one right now, Jeff, is what if I give them feedback and they quit? So how do we change this mindset? Well, the mindset has to be this. What if I don't give them the feedback? What if I'm the very person as a leader, because leadership's a high calling. What if Sean wouldn't have had that conversation with me that needed to happen? What if you don't, leader? What if you don't have the conversation and you could be the very person that has been put into their life to help them reach their fullest potential? This is the high calling. So first, understand, why do we avoid it? But what are the high costs? Now, we also teach the types of feedback, which is where style starts to come in. But you have to know your audience when you're giving feedback. And there's a lot of feedback styles out there, Jeff, but I would tell you the four that we really hone in on are directive, collaborative, supportive, and Socratic. You know, no peak performer, high-tenured person on your team is thrilled about directive feedback. They're just not. They've been there. And so we have to know who our audience is. Adversely, if you have a brand new person to your team that has very low tenure in your industry, if you're too highly supportive, they could be confused because they haven't been given a playbook and they need direct feedback. So we teach leaders the understanding of the types of feedback, that this is kind of a tool belt now, and we educate them on when to pull out the right feedback for the right audience, as well as common pitfalls of giving feedback. And so these are some of the things that we talk about is, yes, I think it is important to know your style, but even more so is to have self-awareness of, why might I be avoiding the tough conversation? What types of feedback are there? If you're asking that trivia question to leaders right now, and if you're a listener, have you ever thought that there's multiple types of feedback? Because there are. And the more we educate people on what they are, the more equipped they're going to be to know when to use them and how to use them based off of the audience that's in front of them.
Let's talk about that a little more, Jeff. You said multiple types of feedback. Obviously we can't give an entire workshop here, but tease this out for us. What do you mean by that? Because that caught my attention.
Yeah. So for example, there's directive feedback, and directive feedback is great feedback for the new hire, the new person on the team. They like that. They want to know the playbook. They want to know the culture. They want to know what the expectation of how to do it right is. But so often what will happen is if we lean too much on style, because there's people listening and watching that their style is directive. They're a driver type, right?
Yeah.
They're an alpha type. Well, you need to blend to your audience, and you need to understand that if you have a 20-year industry employee that's been with your organization for 20 years, and they have a bad month or a bad quarter, they probably don't need directive feedback. They don't need to be told that what they're doing is wrong. Probably what they need is collaborative feedback or supportive feedback. And this collaboration is leading with what? Questions to uncover feedback, leading them to the destination, leading them to an answer versus telling them what they did wrong. And this is where, as leaders, we have to ask ourselves, do we want to be right or do we want what's right? And we've heard this before. But understanding what kind of feedback to use to the specific audience that's in front of you is absolutely crucial. Supportive feedback is very well used whenever you may have an employee that's going through a personal issue. That doesn't mean that the mission doesn't keep going on. The mission is still the mission. But maybe they need a level of supportive feedback, because if you give them directive feedback, they might say, I already knew that. So they don't need you to tell them the answer. They need you to come alongside them to get to the destination. This is why there can be a lot of turnover, is because we don't understand the audience and what we need to feed them. The analogy I use a lot is fishing. If you go on a fishing trip to the lake or to the ocean, you take a tackle box that has drawers and 100 different types of bait on it, but probably not in that tackle box is your favorite snack. Just because I like a Snickers bar doesn't mean that I'm putting it on a fishing hook. I have to know what fish I'm trying to catch and what they might like to eat, right?
Right.
And so we teach leaders these different styles of feedback and when is the best scenario to use that to get the best outcomes. The other thing is what not to do. You know, this feedback sandwich that most leaders have been taught, I'm not a fan. I think it's very confusing. And this is that start with the good, then go to the bad, then go to the good. To me, you're just confusing people. And so don't use that. Remember, feedback is just to modify the next step. We don't label our feedback. Labeling is you always, Jeff. You never. You're always late. Always. I've been here 20 years. I'm late every meeting, right? Or delaying feedback is another one because of fear of, or right. I don't have time. So these types of things is what is so important to get from this, you know, these myths of feedback avoidance to having truly productive conversations that can change individuals. And if you do this consistently across your team, guess what? The tide lifts all the ships, but it does require time and it does require attention individually at the organizational level.
Well, you know, you mentioned this quiet quitting epidemic that's occurring, and you know the amount of, you know, obviously lost time and resources that it is sucking up. It really is a relevant topic in the education field only because currently we're struggling through a dramatic teacher shortage throughout the country. And when we look at the data in terms of the bench or the pipeline for new teachers, then it really just exasperates the problem. And we know that this is only going to increase, you know, 5 years out. And there's incredible panic occurring right now. In the meantime, there's a lot of data and research that shows the leader, if the leader is, you know, kind of meet certain qualifications, people stay, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. We had an expert on in this area who has been studying teacher attrition for the last 20, 30 years at a University of Pennsylvania. And his point was, it is true. He said, but if you want a solution, the solution is the leader. Because always. It's very clear that with the right leader, under the right structures and system and culture, people, meaning teachers, stay, right? And so, once again, my fascination with supporting the leader, because I think it has this incredible trickle-down process that can make a dramatic difference for, you know, people or the bottom line of the organization, in our case, kids, right? So, and so you mentioned one of the three legs of the stool is interesting because I've done a bit of a soapbox on this before. I call it the A word to draw people in wondering what is the A word. And it is accountability. That it's an interesting word in that we love to, as maybe this is a cultural attribute in the country, we love to talk about accountability. We love to say we need to have more accountability, At all levels, we talk about it. And then as soon as that accountability, that A word, is aligned to us personally, I think it causes us to kind of bristle. It creates this reaction. It's a negative one, right? Of accountability. I'm going to be held accountable. I believe in accountability, but something about me being held accountable. However, there is this really healthy accountability that I somehow think we forget about, or we've just misconstrued the understanding of the word accountability. Can you unpack accountability for us? Because I know you know it's important. It's one of your, it's one of the three legs of the stool you described. So walk us through the importance and maybe the opportunity for a healthy accountability.
Yeah, I think healthy accountability starts with the leader and framing in their mind the value of accountability. You know, because there are leaders still out there that they do carry a big stick and they want people to toe the line. And when I say jump, you say how high. And you may not admit that, or you know, but there are leadership styles out there like that. So they can't wait for the opportunity. Because if I'm out there swinging this stick, then I know change is happening. If there's a problem, I'm running to the problem. Now, the other side of the pendulum is, look, I know I need to address this, but I mean, I'd rather do anything than to have to tell Mrs. Smith, who is the culture of our team, the sweetest woman I've ever met, that she's in trouble. And so I think as leaders, what we have to frame in our mind is that accountability is necessary to progress. Accountability is necessary to helping people reach their fullest potential. The best way to have this, because accountability is tough. Accountability is tension. I don't care how you shape it. I don't care how much empathy you have. I don't care what tone you deliver it in. Accountability is tension. But here's what we know about tension. Nothing good ever comes without tension. Everything good has come with a level of discomfort, a level of tension, a tough conversation. I mean, we learned this in Planet Fitness in the month of January. It's like we're 2 weeks in and we feel like, you know, we got hit by a Mack truck, right?
Yeah.
But we know this is good for us, right? We keep reminding ourselves this is good for us. And so leaders have to keep reframing that. Now, the best thing that we can do, in my opinion, is to start addressing the accountability before the actual accountability conversation. We do this by recreating the expectations constantly. And we're asking ourselves constantly, are my expectations clear? Are they understood? Are my expectations reasonable and fair? Can people articulate the expectations? And does everybody in my organization know why they're good for them? Have they been trained adequately to meet or exceed the expectation? And if I can check all of these boxes, and now I'm having these individual connections, and I'm asking my direct reports, hey, if there's ever a time that I saw you moving in a way, talking in a way, acting in a way that was not promoting you to get to the goals that you and I have shared, would you want me to tell you? Well, when there's no emotion, the answer is yes. And one thing I'd like to share, Jeff, is this strategy that I call the five questions that literally every listener and viewer can take from this. And this will be especially valuable to the person that avoids confrontation at all costs, because we have those in every organization. And by the way, that doesn't make you a bad leader. Maybe you've just never been taught. But just think about it. The next time you have an employee that shows up late to a meeting for the third time this month,
okay,
here's five questions that they can go through that can literally change the landscape of accountability, assuming they've already done these things. Question one is, do you know what the expectation is? This lets us know, is this a can't do or a won't do? Question two is, can you tell me what the expectation is? Now I'm validating, do they actually know what it is? Question three is, can you tell me why meeting or exceeding the expectation is good for you? Now what we're getting is justification and we're getting purpose. There's purpose behind this versus just a set of rules. I love rules, said nobody ever, right? Like, what's in it for me? But then we go to question four, and question four is, what behaviors are you gonna change in the future to make sure that you can exceed these expectations and meet your professional goals? This is where we start to get buy-in, and we're not directive. We're collaborating them to improvement. Now, watch how I reset for future need for accountability with question five.
Okay.
If this were to continue, what do you think we should do about it? Now we're opening it up and we're letting them know that if this continues to be a deficiency, there will be accountability. Now, what I'm giving them in the future is a gift versus just a reprimand. Big deposits allow you to earn the right to a big withdrawal, and there's ways to go about doing that.
You know, I appreciate that you brought up tension. I think that, you know, one thing I've mentioned to people before is that discomfort. Number one, we know that we learn at our optimal levels when we're uncomfortable and safe. It's those two things, that that juxtaposition, that creates incredible growth. You have to be uncomfortable. And you also have to feel safe, right? And if you can create that environment, you know your people will do extremely well. Now, if they're uncomfortable and don't feel safe, well, we're going to have a fight or flight scenario, aren't we?
Right? 100%.
Right? But you we also don't want people to be cozy all the time. If we're cozy and we're constantly comfortable, what urgency is there for us to grow or improve, right? And so I appreciate the concept of tension that you bring up, because it's so important. As opposed to avoid it, let's run towards it. Now, so Jeff, in the meantime, you're teaching leaders, right? Now, I know you're working on a book. And then, by the way, as soon as that's ready, you know I'm going to be bugging you to come back, right? So just a heads up, Get ready to be annoyed by me as soon as your book gets published. But in the meantime, leaders come to you, whether it be like through in-services. How does this work for you? How are you teaching leaders? Just give us the basics of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of ways. I mean, we have a senior leadership mastermind group that we have that tackles, you know, what senior leaders are facing. And, you know, you had mentioned retention. It's a big topic, attracting new talent, creating culture. So we do have that in place. We also have the workshops. So we're now doing workshops all over the country and some other countries at this point. So we are going into organizations. We do a lot of discovery to find out what are their biggest challenges so that we can somewhat customize the training to their biggest opportunities. So we do a heavy lift in training as well. And then we also do the one-on-one coaching. At this time, we've currently delegated that only to the most senior leaders in organizations, but we do still do one-on-one coaching. So we help with strategy, which is the consulting side. We have the mastermind group so that there's healthy benchmarking among peer groups, but the training is what we're finding is having the biggest impact on transitioning cultures.
And jeffhancher.com, right?
That's it. Jeff Hancher, like Jolly Rancher, but it's with an H.
So this is the traditional last question we give to our guests. And the reason we do it this way is that our community, the vast majority, 90%+ of our support processes are roundtable ones, right? Where we say circles are better than rows. And, you know, that's this concept that we have. This is the one thing, the Leader Chat is the one thing we do that is this pushing out of important content that we think people need to hear. Now, if you and I were to pretend, however, we're around a table with other leaders, and we'll hone the focus here. Let's pretend that they are superintendents within a system, which is maybe very similar to a CEO in the private industry. So there are layers between them, and you know there's various layers all the way down to through the teacher and classified staff within the school district. If you were to say, like, I want to leave you with this, you know, kind of your elevator speech, drop the mic moment. What would you want to leave them with based upon, you know, this conversation, of course, your area of expertise?
Yeah, to the most senior leaders, you're saying, Jeff?
Correct.
I would tell you that you have the biggest stage opportunity to leave the biggest legacy. And when you were asking the question, Jeff, it made me think of my friend Clint Pulver. And there may be people listening and watching that know Clint's story. But when he was a young boy, he was always grabbing his pen and hitting the desk and, you know, banging on things with two pencils. He would get kicked out of class. He would get expelled a lot and suspended and detention and all of these things until he came up to this one teacher. And this one teacher came over to him to get him to stop banging on the desk again. And Clint looked up at him and said, "Am I in trouble?" And he said, "No, you're not in trouble. I think you're a drummer." And he got him some drumsticks, introduced him to the music teacher, and now Clint has been all over the world playing on the biggest stages, playing those drums. And as a senior leader, I think one of the things that we have to always be doing is we have to be visionaries. I understand that there's testing assignments and scores and quotas and expectations, but I believe this, that, and I'm not an educator, but I believe that if we can really get people to capture the heart of the vision, that we are literally building the future and that we get to make deposits in the lives of young human beings that could impact legacies for generations to come. We have to be the visionaries. We have to be the ones to build the culture so that we, everybody in our organization loves it here. That means that we have to give up working in the system and working on the system. When we're working on it instead of in it, now we have an ingredient to scale, to create leadership culture, to reproduce. If we're not reproducing this in our leadership culture, as a senior leader, you're carrying a heavy weight, you're running on burnout, and you're willing to give up because it's just not worth it, which is why I believe we're seeing that in education. Because is the juice really worth the squeeze? It's often that when that happens, there's a lack of vision and there's a lack of leadership culture. We see this at the lowest of pays successfully done, like a Chick-fil-A, right? To give an example, people love working there and Target pays more, but all this, they're fully staffed and it's their pleasure to serve you. So I know it's possible. I didn't say it's easy. It's very challenging. But I think with the right support, we can get there.
You know, what makes me really smart, Jeff, is that I invite really good people onto our leader chats. This has been awesome. And I knew when I heard this topic and I heard you speak, I knew this would be the right content for the leaders that we serve. I want to thank you so much for your time and all the work that you're doing, but maybe even more importantly, the work that you're going to do. So this will not be the last time our paths cross.
Well, thank you, Jeff, and thank you to everybody that's listening and what you do to make people better. And as educators, man, it's an extremely high calling. And so thank you all. And obviously, if I can ever come back and support your efforts, Jeff, you know I'm a big fan of the work that you do, and it was an honor to be with you all today.
Indeed, my friend. Thank you so much. Jeff Hancher, that sounds like rancher, right? Okay.
That's it.
See you. Ladies and gentlemen, so think back to his what he left, what Jeff left us with. He talked about us being visionaries. Let's remind ourselves what a visionary is. A visionary is somebody who can see the potential in others or in a system that other people can't. That is our job as leaders. I'm so glad he reminded us of that. And what did I tell you? I knew this content would be exactly what we as educational leaders need to hear. Ladies, gentlemen, educators, leaders, thank you so much for the work that you do. Be well.